All right, Signal here, Israel National Radio. Joining me right now is a man who's been on the show many times. He's a veteran international Jewish leader at one time with the World Jewish Congress, occupied a senior role. He's a very successful businessman, Issy Liebler. Welcome to Israel National Radio.
Thank you very much. Nice to speak to you again.
Good to have you on. I just want to say this before we get started, and then we're going to get into the meat of things. One of the reasons why I admire you so, and I've told you this personally in email, is because you're a part of the elite. You could have gone in another direction completely, yet in spite of the fact of your success as a Jewish leader in Australia and other parts of the world, and your success in business, you have never backed down on what you knew and understood to be true. And for that, many people around the world admire you. You write frequently for the Jerusalem Post in articles, and I want to get to the issues at hand immediately. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has made it clear that he has no regrets about Lebanon. The Winograd Report, we already know essentially what's in it. The final report is coming out now. Yet Ehud Olmert says, and I don't want to misquote him here, I am comfortable with my decisions during the second Lebanon war. Izzy, what is wrong with this leader?
There is something so grotesque about the behavior of our prime minister that I find it difficult to discuss to an audience outside of Israel. But I feel that the situation that confronts us today is so extreme that I want to speak frankly to fellow Jews. I feel that the problem we face today is one of leadership, and it is exemplified in a man who refuses to accept any accountability, a man who zigzags and changes his policy according not what is in the interest of the country, but what he feels is his main objective is to stay in office. And it's a very, very tragic situation for Israel, because we are at the moment going through a crisis which can have existential implications for us. I have no doubt about our long-term future. But in the short term, if we continue with some of the insane measures that we've been taking, we are heading for a path which can cost us much needless blood.
Explain this. How is it possible? It appears to me his approval rating, I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but it's hovering at somewhere about 6-8%. I'm not certain what it is today. How is it possible that a leader like this can remain in office? What sustains the Kadima Party? Why doesn't this government collapse?
The reason the government doesn't collapse is because the Knesset itself has become embodied with people who share, to some extent, the same lack of responsibility as the Prime Minister. Because it should be the obligation of the representatives of the people to tell a man who does not have the confidence of people that it's time for him to go and to replace him. But knowing that many of them in an election will be sent home permanently, unfortunately, they, and in particular cabinet ministers, are glued to their seats and not prepared to take the steps that decent Jewish leaders in time immemorial have always taken. We have a marvelous people here, and they say that you get the leaders you deserve, and I want to assure you we do not have the leaders we deserve, and I pray that we will see the end of them in the near future.
But it's a democracy. I know you obviously know a lot about Australian democracy, and there you have a stable government that has a favorable view towards the Jewish state, the United States, Canada. You're familiar with these countries, especially in your senior roles in the World Jewish Congress and so on. How do you explain? I mean, why isn't there a no confidence vote? How does Ehud Olmert, I mean, given the fact it's not just those on the right that are deeply concerned about his leadership. There have been huge protests in Rabin Square. Folks on the left, folks from Tel Aviv with the earrings, with the whole deal, they're against him. I mean, there's a gravity issue here. Why is this government not coming down?
There are really two levels. The one I mentioned before, a lot of the people that should be making the decision are frightened that when he goes, they go, so they hang on as long as possible. The other factor is there is, in this country, an obsession about Netanyahu, who is the most likely candidate to take over, good or bad, he is the most likely candidate to take over. There's such a pathological hatred in some quarters that some of them would even prefer to see Olmert stay in to keep him out. In other words, the fear of Netanyahu. I myself feel angry with Netanyahu because I feel that Netanyahu should be speaking up and saying much more than he's saying. I think he, too, is kind of sitting back and waiting for the rocks to fall, and it will come into, and feeling that the easiest way is not to say, is not to be as active as he could be and should be.
Do you think that the reason why, and I know this is speculating, I'm asking you to do mind reading, but just bear with me here. Do you think he's a little gun shy? Meaning he has always been portrayed, he's been cast as a political animal, too aggressive in the past, and now he's trying to sort of rise above that. Do you think that's playing here at all?
He's trying to do that, and his advisors are telling him, if you keep quiet, the people will vote for you, and the polls will show that that is happening. But by keeping quiet, there is an absence, because he's the leader of the opposition, and I feel if he were to get up and speak and use the magic gift that he has, because he can articulate brilliantly and point out the terrible mistakes that are being made by this government day by day, I think that ultimately, despite the fact that the media hates him, he would still prevail. And but what you say is right. He's playing it cautious. He's been burnt. He's made mistakes, and he has weaknesses, and he's trying to rectify them, and perhaps feels that by keeping a lower profile, that's better. But there's too much of this thinking of myself, and they should be thinking of leading the country. That's what is, until 20 years ago, whether a politician was Mapai of the left or of the right, every politician, even politicians like Yitzhak Rabin, who led us into a great disaster with Oslo, but I can tell you, knowing Yitzhak Rabin, and he made the biggest blunder and the biggest gamble, which didn't pay off, but whilst he was in the midst of it, he was convincing himself not that he was trying to stay in power, not that he was doing it for his own personal benefit, believing mistakenly he was acting on behalf of the people. That's the way every Israeli leader behaved until somehow or other something happened. It probably started with Barak. Barak was the first to start looking at Gallup polls and trying to anticipate what public opinion might think. And when you get people and ring up people on the telephone, and you get a lot of this in Israel today, and they say to you, what do you think on this and this? You get these stupid, simplistic answers. The role of leadership is not to follow. The role of leadership is to lead, to assess, and to sell to the electorate, which is very sophisticated, where it's given the right kind of leadership, where they should be going. And all our problems today, I say, have been largely brought about as a result of our own stupidities, blunders, and mistakes. And many of us are burning with anger because we feel that the threats that we're facing are self-inflicted. We're the biggest threat we have. Even now, we have not been able to convey to the public, because of the stupidity with which we handled the Shderot situation, where we allowed public opinion throughout the world for years and years to say there's nothing wrong with rockets flying over people if they don't kill too many. What country in the world would have tolerated a situation even for weeks where rockets were being thrown with impunity, launched with impunity by neighbors, and we still continue providing them with electricity, and we babble about humanitarianism? I can assure you that there's not a single country in the world, not a single country in the world that would have tolerated such a situation. Mm. And I can just imagine Americans, if the Mexicans were lobbying missiles at them, or European countries who are so brave to condone us, to attack us and condemn us, how they would be if their neighbors were doing what our so-called neighbors are doing.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Eli Liebler, international Jewish leader, writes columns that frequently appear in the Jerusalem Post. I got to ask you this question, Izzy. It's a personal question, but this is something that people ask about you and wonder about you. You have personally stood up for what you believe in, and it's created, you've earned a number of enemies as a result. When you were in the World Jewish Congress, you stood up against Edgar Bronfman, an Israel Singer, and so on. And you have this courage to speak out, even though at times it was unpopular. Now, I'm not going to ask you where you got the courage. I know the answer. I know what you're going to tell me, that you had to do what was right. Did you, in the midst of that, all the other issues where you stood up, is there a voice in the back of your head that says to you, maybe I shouldn't do this? I mean, do you have any part of you that says, you know what, maybe I should be quiet, or you just say it the way you see it? I mean, do you go through this normal human concerns and fears?
Look, everybody has concerns, and everybody, when one is involved in a political or public struggle, and particularly when there's issues which I regard as very dear to myself, issues of Jewish morality, you have to ask yourselves questions all along. But the one thing I have always believed in, that you don't go by what prevailing public opinion says you should do, you go by what you think is right, and you try to persuade the people. And that I have tried to live by in all my public life, and I must say, in most cases, I've been vindicated. And yeah. What we need is that sort of an attitude by the leadership of Israel, going back to the way they were. And I think there's an awareness amongst the people. I wrote a column about this only a couple of weeks ago, and I got a huge flow of responses from all over the world, but particularly from Israelis, because some of my stuff is now appearing in the Israeli press and being translated. And you can see that I'm not alone, that the leadership is out of touch, that people have made mistakes in putting certain people in office. They realize their mistakes, and I believe that in a not too distant future, we can look forward to better times.
I want to give my listeners your website address where they could read articles that you write. It's simply yourlastname.com, LEIBLER.com, Liebler.com. Who are, in your opinion, the great Israeli leaders that you, or I don't even say Israeli, who are the great leaders that you admire, and why do you admire them?
Living ones or past ones?
Give me the last sentence. I mean, your family. let's go in your lifetime, your family, through some...
In my lifetime,
yeah, go, yeah.
There were three or four people that stood out. Ben-Gurion, who was a giant. Agree with him, disagree with him, he was a giant. I would say the same thing about Menachem Begin, who was really a man who, for the most part of his life, was crushed, was defamed, and even described as a fascist. Hmm. Yet he managed to extricate himself from that and gave us the kind of feeling of national direction that we desperately needed. Those two, and Golda Meir had some big mistakes, but she still embodied, to my mind, although I didn't agree with much of her other political, domestic attitudes, she still embodied the Zionism and the Jewish nationalism that is so lacking amongst these people. Hmm. When you get a prime minister, like our prime minister, who can talk to a bunch of American Jewish pacifists and say to them, we are tired, we are sick of winning, we are sick of coming out on top, we want peace at any price, that sort of thing. When you get a man like Olmert saying this to Jewish Policy Forum people, the Israel Policy Forum people, who are going to your government and asking your government to press Israel to be making more concessions instead of supporting Israel, you ask yourself, what sort of leaders? You can't compare these with the leaders of the past. Hmm. Those were the great leaders.
Hmm. I'll make a statement, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. You spoke about Golda Meir, the former prime minister of Israel. She was prime minister during the Yom Kippur War, which was a catastrophe. I mean, although technically Israel won the war, we paid an enormous price. It was in human life, it was and certainly there were terrible debacles, intelligence debacles, a failure to act upon intelligence. And she was prime minister when the report came out. And I see a parallel here. When the report came out in 1974, which in fact reported that there was enormous failure, she had the courage to resign. Is there a comparison, Ehud Olmert?
There's very much a comparison, but not only with her. Look at David Ben-Gurion. He had a fight. When he saw that his cabinet didn't go along with him, he didn't just mush in. He, on principle, retired. When Begin felt they'd reached the end of the line, he retired. Look at Rabin, the first time he was in office. When his wife was involved in that financial
bar mitzvah
affair in America with the checks, he resigned. Today, that would be regarded as a joke amongst these clowns, the way some of them behave. Look at our former finance minister. Our former finance minister was taking money, huge amounts of money. He was appointed a minister, and he was taking out bags of money. And he was appointed. The people who appointed him must have known what he was like. I believe one thing, by the way, the fact that the corruption in this country has come to the front pages of the newspapers, and that today everybody, in fact, not everybody, today leaders are getting a tougher treatment than the man in the street by investigating authorities, is indicative of the fact that corruption is one issue that we will overcome. And I predict that we will be free of corruption in the years to come, that this is not something that's going to last. But it's also part of the overall leadership. And I must say to you, if you have the right leader at the top, everything follows. If you have the wrong leader at the top, everything goes badly. And I believe that the key to our future is going to be the new leader. If he's a good leader, we can rapidly get back. And it doesn't only apply to the problems we have in Israel. The diaspora is falling apart. Other than religious Jews, the feeling of alienation, which I predicted already 10 or 15 years ago, the looming disaster, I wrote a little booklet about it, the looming disaster of diaspora-Israel relations is now coming home to roost. We're getting young people who say, and they said in surveys, well, if Israel disappeared, it wouldn't be regarded as a personal disaster for me. Now, I know that my generation, someone who has said something like that, we would have had 80, 90% of the people would have said it would be the greatest disaster for us personally, not just a disaster for the Jewish people. It's indicative of the fact that young people are losing the ties and the understanding of the importance of the centrality of Israel. And other than religious Jews, without Israel, most Jews have nothing. Nothing.
We have
religious Jews have a religious way to keep them together. But the 80% who are not observant and not religious, those people are going to drift further and further away, because Israel was the one thing that still kept them together and gave them pride and dignity. And if we lose that, och and vey to the Jewish people.
Och and vey. We have 3 minutes left, and I want to fetch two questions into those 3 minutes. First, we'll do a quickie. Bibi Netanyahu, you said, is likely to be elected the next prime minister of Israel. Obviously, this is speculation, but in fact, the polls would indicate that you're correct. Do you want to see him as the next prime minister?
In the present circumstances of the people available, he articulates far better than anyone I know what Israel should be doing. He is not necessarily a reflection of everything I would like, but he is certainly of the people available by far the best, and I would like to pray that he's learned a lot of lessons from the mistakes he made in the past. He's told me this many times, that he's learned a lot, and I hope that what he says is true, and if he becomes prime minister, he will deliver us.
100 seconds left. George W. Bush. I mean, it's all we have is literally less than 2 minutes. Just America's president just visited Israel, went to Jerusalem, stayed at the King David Hotel. Your quick observation of that spectacle.
My concern is that George W. Bush, who was probably our best friend of any American prime minister, has had his arm twisted and is moving away from us, and I fear a chasm between ourselves and America. On the other hand, George Bush is still the best president that we've ever had, and I pray that his successor will not be much worse than him.
So you're not, I'm surprised, because I thought you were going to rip him to pieces. You're not.
I'm very disappointed with his Secretary of State. He's given her a free run, but I must say to you, when an Israeli, you cannot expect an American president to be more Zionist than the Prime Minister of Israel. And largely what President Bush has been doing has been echoing the sentiments that have been conveyed to him by the Israeli leadership. And that starts with the Gaza disengagement and goes all the way through. Most of these ideas came from the Israeli government. And at a time when we have greater support in the United States, not only the Jewish community, but in the United States than ever before, we have failed to use public opinion, we have failed to explain ourselves, and we have simply gone along meekly when Condoleezza Rice has imposed upon us strictures which have cost us Jewish lives and will cost us many more in the years to come.
If I had more time, Izzy, I would ask you, how is it possible that they're seeing the debacle in Gaza and seeing what's happened from the disengagement, the catastrophe? How is it possible talking about giving more land? And I would ask you that, and I'm sure you'd go on a while. Could you do that one in 20 seconds? I know we're squeezing out
it
here.
It is inconceivable.
Thank you.
That we are moving and making concessions to a bunch of gangsters who are no different than Hamas. They speak different languages, but have the same objectives. They have no power. They are corrupt. They will ultimately go to bed with these other gangsters, and they both share one dream, that we go back into the sea. And for us to be doing this is creating a situation which will cause problems for the successors of this government, because that will be the benchmark on which they'll start negotiations again. It is an act of criminality.
Brilliant. Izzy Liebler, the website address for his articles and is Liebler.com, Liebler. Listeners can't talk to you, but I can. We honor you. You're an extraordinary man, and may God give you the strength and the health to continue and speak out what's on your mind. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Be well. Shalom.
Okay, all the best.